And welcome back to the deep dive. We love taking these complex topics, you know, the kind that can take hours to really grasp, and breaking them down into these nice consumable insights.
Yeah, you get that shortcut to being well-informed.
Exactly. So you can impress your friends at your next cocktail party, or more likely, you know, ace that upcoming law school exam.
That's probably more realistic for our audience, yeah.
And today, we're diving deep, no pun intended, into a case that's both fascinating and, I gotta say, pretty heartbreaking. It's the Delaware Supreme Court case, Oxendine v. State from 1987. We're going to be focusing on this core concept of causation in the context of a manslaughter charge, which, as you all know, is no small matter.
Right, because at the heart of this case is a 6-year-old Jeffrey Oxendine Jr., whose life was tragically cut short. His father, Jeffrey Oxendine Sr., was convicted of manslaughter. But what makes this case a real head-scratcher and why we chose it for our deep dive today is this question: did the prosecution actually prove, beyond a reasonable doubt, that the father's actions caused or even accelerated his son's death?
That's the million-dollar question. And to get there, we've pored over a whole bunch of sources, really detailed case briefs, a perplexity analysis that really breaks things down, and even some guidance on how to best explain all this to you folks.
We want to make sure we're giving you the clearest picture possible.
Absolutely. So our mission today is pretty straightforward. We want to figure out, did the evidence in this case actually meet those super strict legal requirements for a manslaughter conviction? What exactly did the prosecution need to prove about causation, and did they pull it off?
And this case really hinges on some very specific legal standards and, well, the limits of medical certainty.
All right, so let's set the stage here. Paint us a picture of the circumstances surrounding this case.
Okay, so little Jeffrey lived with his dad, Jeffrey Sr., and his dad's partner, Leotha Tyree. And the poor kid suffered 2 separate abdominal injuries. The first one happened when Tyree pushed him into a bathtub.
Oh, that's awful.
It is. And it caused internal injuries and led to peritonitis, which, you know, is inflammation of that abdominal lining.
Super serious stuff. Life-threatening, even if not treated quickly.
And then to make matters even worse, the very next day, Jeffrey Sr. physically abused his son. And like you said, he already had these serious internal injuries.
Right. And that abuse caused even more trauma to his abdomen. Jeffrey Jr.'s condition just went downhill from there, and he died later that same day. Now, here's the real kicker. The medical experts who examined Jeffrey Jr., they couldn't definitively say whether it was the father's abuse on top of everything else from the bathtub incident that actually caused or accelerated his death.
So that's where this whole issue of causation gets really murky.
Exactly. And under Delaware law, to get a manslaughter conviction, the prosecution has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant's actions accelerated the victim's death.
It's not just about whether they contributed to injuries or made an existing condition worse. Right. It's about proving that those specific actions sped up the time of death. That's a crucial distinction, because even if you could say the father's actions aggravated those existing injuries, well, that alone isn't enough for a manslaughter conviction in Delaware. It has to be acceleration.
So then the $64,000 question is, how did the prosecution try to prove this acceleration of death? And why did the Delaware Supreme Court ultimately say, nope, not enough?
Okay, so a big part of this case comes down to the expert testimony from these 2 doctors, Dr. Inquito and Dr. Hermeli.
Right. They were supposed to provide that medical link between the father's actions and the son's death.
Exactly. But both doctors admitted they were uncertain.
Like, how uncertain are we talking here?
Well, Dr. Inquito said that the injury from Jeffrey Sr. could have contributed to the death, but he couldn't say for sure.
Could have.
Yeah, not exactly rock solid. He couldn't definitively say that the father's actions were the cause or even a big factor in when the child died.
Especially considering the severity of those initial injuries.
Exactly. And then you have Dr. Hamley, whose testimony boiled down to basically saying it was possible the father's actions sped up the death.
Possible. That's even less convincing than could have.
Right. And the Delaware Supreme Court basically slammed that testimony. They said, and this is a quote, "A doctor's testimony that a thing is possible is no evidence at all."
Wow. Okay. They really went there.
Yeah. They made it crystal clear that you can't base a criminal conviction on speculation or vague possibilities. These opinions have to be grounded in what the law calls reasonable medical certainty. And because the prosecution's experts couldn't meet that standard with their testimony, the manslaughter charge just couldn't hold up.
So wait a minute. If the expert testimony was so weak, what was the prosecution's overall strategy? Do they have any other arguments about how the father caused his son's death?
They did, actually, and this is where it gets even more interesting. At the start, it seemed like they were going for this combined direct effect theory, basically that all the injuries from both Tyree and Oxendine together caused the death.
Okay, so not just the father's actions, but the bathtub incident too.
Right. They also toyed with this idea of aggravation, saying Oxendine's actions made those earlier injuries so much worse that it led to the death.
But like we discussed before, just making injuries worse doesn't automatically equal accelerating death in the eyes of the law.
Right. The trial court actually made sure the jury knew that. For manslaughter, contribution or aggravation without acceleration is insufficient to establish causation.
Meaning the prosecution had to prove that Jeffrey Sr.'s actions actually sped up his son's death.
Exactly. But as we've seen, the evidence just wasn't strong enough to back that up.
It seems like they maybe changed their focus during the trial, but in the end, they didn't have the medical proof to support their final argument.
It sounds like it, yeah. There just wasn't any evidence to show, with that really high level of medical certainty, that the child would have lived any longer if Oxendine hadn't hurt him. And this brings us to the whole idea of but-for causation. Yeah, it's a key concept in the law. It basically asks, but for the defendant's actions, would the same outcome have happened? In this case, but for the father's abuse, would the child have died when he did?
I see. So for the prosecution's acceleration theory to work, they needed to prove that the answer to that question was no?
Right. The child would have lived longer but for the abuse. And the medical experts just couldn't say that for sure.
It's tough because it's clear the father did something terrible, but the law requires that very specific proof of accelerated causation.
That's the thing, right? The Delaware Supreme Court even said they found the father's actions repulsive. But they also said their job was to apply the law, and the law requires that proof of accelerated death for a manslaughter conviction. No matter how bad someone's actions seem, you still have to prove they meet the legal definition of the crime.
It seems like we keep bumping up against this tension between legal responsibility and what we might consider moral blameworthiness.
Totally. But hold on. There's another wrinkle in this case, remember. The manslaughter conviction was reversed, but Oxendine was still found guilty of something.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He was convicted of second-degree assault, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain why that conviction stuck even though the manslaughter one didn't?
Sure. So second-degree assault in Delaware requires the prosecution to prove the defendant intentionally caused serious physical injury to another person. And in this case, there is no question that Oxendine caused serious harm to his son.
No getting around that.
Right. And for the assault charge, it didn't matter if those injuries accelerated the child's death or not. The evidence clearly showed the father intentionally hurt his son, and that was enough for the assault conviction.
So basically, they had enough evidence to prove he hurt his son seriously, but not enough to prove those specific injuries were what ultimately caused or sped up his death.
Precisely. And this distinction is super important. It shows how different criminal charges have different legal standards of proof.
You need different types and levels of evidence to get a conviction depending on the crime.
Exactly. And the Oxendine case is a great example of that. It shows us that contributing to harm or aggravating an injury is different from actually accelerating death, at least when it comes to manslaughter charges.
And it really underscores how crucial expert testimony is, especially in cases like this.
For sure. Those experts need to be able to say with reasonable medical certainty that the defendant's actions cause the specific outcome the law requires for that charge. Just saying it's possible or it could have happened isn't enough.
The Delaware Supreme Court was very clear about that.
Yeah, they drew a hard line. And this has big implications for prosecutors. They need to figure out their theory of causation early on and make sure they have solid expert testimony to back it up. If they change their approach mid-trial, especially without that strong evidence, it can really hurt their case.
And we see that play out in Oxendine.
Yep. It also forces us to think about those times when the legal outcome of a case doesn't quite line up with what we might personally feel is just.
Right, like in this case. Most people would probably agree that what the father did was horrible and he should be held accountable for his son's death.
Absolutely. But the legal system has to follow its own rules about evidence and proof. In this case, they couldn't definitively prove that the father's actions accelerated the death, even though he clearly hurt his son. And that's why the manslaughter conviction couldn't stand.
It comes back to that but-for cause. They couldn't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the death wouldn't have happened when it did, but for the father's actions.
Exactly.
So what are some of the big takeaways from this deep dive?
Well, I think Oxendine really shows us how closely appellate courts look at medical evidence, especially when it comes to proving causation in criminal cases. It sets a high bar for prosecutors.
They can't just suggest a possible link between the actions and the outcome. They need to prove it with solid medical evidence.
Right. And I think this case also raises some interesting questions. Like, could the outcome have been different if the expert testimony had been presented differently?
Or what does this case tell us about the role of scientific and medical evidence in the courtroom? You know, where are the strengths and where are the limitations?
It definitely gives us a lot to think about, even beyond the specifics of this case.
Absolutely. Well, I think we've given everyone a lot to chew on today. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Oxendine v. State.
We hope you've come away with a better understanding of causation in criminal law. It's a complex topic, but as you can see, it's also incredibly important.
And we'll see you next time for another deep dive into the legal world.
Until then, keep those legal minds sharp.